Well, this is the state of the ASA, and there's a number of things that have been happening. I'm going to give you the 30,000-foot view of the state of the ASA, and this picture is provided so that you know that I actually own a tie. And more importantly, I have worn a tie. But I am retired, and so, yeah. But I want to bring the state, and I'm going to do it with four simple points. Talk about what's happening. First of all, we're an organization that is in change. And we've been in dynamic change now for about 3 years. And that's appropriate for an organization. Everybody, like a biologist, knows that change is necessary. Change actually indicates that you're healthy, that something good is happening. And some many good things are happening in the ASA this year and over these years. So it's healthy growth, development, and flourishing. The ASA is changing to meet changing times. And the impact report that you're going to get later on in the evening details that. So every other year, this is the second, it was 2 years ago, our anniversary, that we had this impact report. I have one for you tonight. Lots of detail in there, including the president's report. And I'm not going to read that to you. You'll see it there. We have changed with our bylaws and our constitution. Past President Steve Mosier was in charge of the committee, a number of EC councils that worked their way through over several years to update our bylaws and constitution to make us effective as an organization. The most important change there is that our council is growing. We had a 5-member council. We're going to go up to as many as 7 members on that council, and significantly, we're bringing in non-fellows into the council. And you'll see the impact of that in terms of our diversity, the skill sets that are come, the experience that now can come into the council, because we're not just relying on old guys. We have a flexible structure now that allows us to do that, and that's really helpful. We have a distributed office, as you know. So the main office in Topsfield, it's our geographic presence, but we have a presence, an active presence on the West Coast with Leslie's work there and our executive director. So that sets up some really interesting dynamics, and you'll read about that, and that's part of our change. With change, as you all know, comes emotional issues and questions. You have to leave the old. And you don't know the new yet, but you have to give up what you're really familiar with and to drive and to do those things. Well, we're a growing organization. We're a mature organization at 77 years, so it's time for us to make some structural and procedural changes that will help us be effective going into the future. So we have new staff. That's change. And we have old staff, and they're changing as well, and you'll hear about some of that. We're adding new council members with these new skills, and I'll talk about them later. The governance structure, as I mentioned, is changing. The Evangelical Council for Financial Accountability is an independent organization, and you might think it's mostly for churches, but it also involves Christian nonprofit groups like ourselves. They're like the good housekeeping seal that we give assurance to ourselves and to our donors, and to people on the outside who look in at us, that we are doing things right financially. But there's so much more than that to that council. They provide us with insights into good governance practices at our board level and resources. And the board is taking advantage of those resources to help us grow and develop as a board. And that's important because we now have, instead of a 5-year turnover on the board, we have a 3-year turnover. So doing things differently on the board to get up to speed quickly and be effective is going to be an important aspect of what we do going forward. Our mission. This is the heart of what we do. And sometimes I say we're intensely focused on mission. And its outcome. Our mission is really focused on 3 key areas. The one that has been on display here in our session after session and in our plenary speakers, and you see it so well. That is, we take the discoveries of science, the insights of theology, we bring those together. And we bring them together in new ways, and we do that in lots of different, as you know, ways. And that's unique, I think, to almost any organization across North America. And so we're presenting something to the church. Maybe there are others that are doing that kind of thing too, but we present something to the church that's a service, as well as a service to ourselves, to help us think, come up with new ideas, new ways. And anybody who's been at the front edge knows there's always friction right out there at the front edge of the jet, you know, the leading edge of almost anything. So sometimes there's friction when we do that. So we try and promote dialogue, conversation, agreement where we can, and understanding, mutual understanding if we can. And that really brings me to the third thing, and I think sometimes most important is what we have here, is we have a fellowship. That's a key in our mission. And you see it, fellowship's that old word. It is about like-minded people growing, being together, and doing what we do. And the mentoring aspect, bringing in the next generation of professional Christians in the professions, whether right across the entire scope. And we need to do that better than we've ever done in the past. And we're gearing up. We've got, well, I won't go through the detail. You know the activities. And then finally, leadership on the executive council. I want to introduce to you now the candidates. The bylaws task the council to the nominating committee, headed by the vice president, Terry Gray, doing a report. We're going to present three candidates. It's been our practice that have been through the vetting process and present those to you. You'll see them tonight. And then we'll have a month. You'll look at their credentials, ask questions, interact, and then voting will open up and take place. Those council members will take up their tenure at next summer's meeting at a place yet to be disclosed. I almost said it. It wasn't me. All right. The first individual we're presenting is Janelle Curry. And they're not, it's Janelle, but Jan to me, because she's a good friend. I happen to know her. But she is a provost at Gordon College, has had extensive work with the ASA, done a number of things, and with many of the members in the organization, has research interests. As you'd expect, they're pretty broadly interdisciplinary from a geographer. And then Say Kim is the Deputy Chief Programs Officer of AAAS. And you see her service there and her interest in research. And the third candidate, Yifat Zaidan, is the Director of General Education. She's Assistant Professor of Science and Mathematics at California Baptist University. And she is new to many of us, and I have yet to meet Yifat. I'm looking forward to doing that. But she's you see her service here in various ways, both to the ASA and in her research interests. These are your three candidates. The details will be coming forward to you in the future. And that's the overview of the state of the ASA. And now for the details, I'm going to invite our esteemed executive director, and I don't know how you did on volleyball tonight.
Awesome.
Okay. Hey, well, I won't announce you as the champion, but...
I had to leave early for this meeting.
Okay, that's it. Leslie, please come.
Thank you, John. Let's see if I can get this attached here. Okay, can you hear me? Good. All right, so a lot of the details of what's going on in the ASA over the last couple of years actually can be found in our latest impact report, which I believe was part of your registration packet. So you guys all should have had a chance to get a quick look at that. So I'm going to try to summarize that fairly quickly because we have a lot to cover tonight. So first of all, I'd just like to point out the fact that over the last few years, the annual meeting attendance has steadily been on the rise. From about 3 years ago, we were right around a typical mark of around 250. Last year, we had 340. At the annual meeting at Gordon. We're still tallying the numbers for this year for the entire program, but we know that it's above 300. And as you heard earlier, over 100 of those were first-timers, which we're really excited about. Our local chapters campaign is still going strong. Over the last 3 years, we've gone from 8 U.S. chapters and 3 Canadian chapters to a total of 35 across the U.S. and Canada. So really excited about that. And you can see the list there on the left-hand column, two left-hand columns, the U.S. chapters and Canadian chapters. And already this weekend at our local chapter session, we've had at least 3 new groups express interest in starting more local chapters. So, bless you. we're really excited about how that's coming along. And as those of you who are part of a local chapter can testify, you know that the local chapters are a great place to engage with your local community throughout the year. So we've had some exemplary ASA-supported conferences, regional conferences, take place this past year. They're exemplary in the sense that they show examples of models that local chapters or other kind of grassroots groups within the ASA can take upon themselves to implement in their own communities. And they range from one that was hosted at Azusa Pacific University on Science for Ministers in May that was very well reviewed, and we had a number of great speakers and almost no budget. And it was really a neat example of what you can do with almost no money. The ASA kicked in, I think it was $200, and they also got a local credit union to help sponsor it. But basically on a shoestring budget, they were able to pull off this very, very highly reviewed conference. So, we've also, I'm sure you've heard about this in the past, but the Southern California Christians in Science local chapter has been doing an annual winter day conference for about, I think, isn't there anyone from the SoCal chapter here? Is it been about 15 years now that we've been doing that?
6 years.
Is that all? Seems like a lot longer than that. Okay, 9. We'll go with 9. Anyway, we've been doing that consistently for quite a few years now, and we have, on average, probably about 75 attendees to that each year, and we bring people from across Southern California, from as far south as San Diego, as far north as Fresno, and as far west as Santa Barbara, as well as the greater Southern California, Los Angeles area. And it's kind of a miniature version of this conference. It's held on a Saturday sometime between January and April. So that's been a neat example also. And then for the first time this March at Arizona State University, we had the conference on faith and science. And it was really exciting. Like I say, brand new initiative. It was sponsored in part by ASA at ASU, as well as a number of other organizations. Sponsors came from Fuller Seminary. We got some grant money through Templeton. Some of the money for the conference actually came from Arizona State itself. And very first time, We had 250 attendees at that conference, and many were from the ASU campus itself, faculty, staff, and students, as well as people from the surrounding community. And we had both Catholic and Protestant speakers. It was a really exciting event. It was kicked off on Thursday night of the week by Veritas Forum that was co-publicizing our conference, and we co-publicized the Veritas Forum conference. And so that happened Thursday night. And then Friday we had the kickoff for the COFAS event. And then Saturday we had a number of breakout sessions going. So it was really exciting to see that so well attended. And these serve, again, as examples of what chapters can do across the country. And this COFAS conference in particular was unique in that it was held at a secular university. And it really provides a great example of what I'd like to see replicated at other secular universities across the country. And we have several people that have already agreed to meet to talk about taking steps to do that very thing. So if you happen to have a secular university close to where you live that you might be interested in helping arrange something like that, please come talk to me. So we have a variety of what we're calling public relations initiatives going on. One of which is our ongoing radio show on Science and Faith. And I mentioned this to a couple of the different groups at this conference already. The catch to it is that it happens on the third Saturday morning of each month. And when I say Saturday morning, I really mean midnight to 1 a.m. Pacific time. So if any of you happen to be night owls and are interested in being a guest on our radio show, we've done call-ins with a lot of different people. Actually, we've had quite a few ASA members on the show already, including Robert Mann, Dennis Lemereau, Ken Walgamuth, I'm blanking on some of the others. Jim Peterson, thank you. Jim did an excellent show. So anyway, it's really a lot of fun, right? Those of you that have done it before. You know, so you spend the next couple of days catching up on sleep, but hey. I do it every month, and I am not a night owl, so anyway, but so that's one thing that's going on, and those radio shows get turned into podcasts that then get posted on our website as well as another website, and they're actually trending in what's hot in higher education on iTunes, so it's kind of exciting to see that happen. It's kind of the gift that keeps on giving because people keep listening to them on the podcast, so... also, just to let you know, over the last year, I've had the opportunity to speak at 3 church-organized events, 7 conferences, 7 chapter gatherings, 2 proto-chapter gatherings, and we're really trying across the ASA to get more opportunities to engage with large church audiences. So again, if that's something that you are interested in doing with your own church or another church in your area, and you might be interested in participating in that, please let us know. Okay, another thing that we have been doing over the last year, actually several years, is networking and relationship building with other science and faith organizations. We have a very close relationship with BioLogos. Deb Harsma and I talk on a regular basis and compare notes and share the different things that we're doing, trying to kind of schedule around each other's events so we're not stepping on each other's toes and doing some things in collaboration. AAAS Doser is another opportunity that we've been building on over the last few years and have done some collaborative work on booklets and publicizing different events that we each have going. And the John Templeton Foundation, actually this should say Templeton Foundations, JTF is one of the 3 that we're building relationships with. So there's the John Templeton Foundation, there's the Templeton World Charities Foundation, and the Templeton Religion Trust Foundation, all of which I'm a member of as by virtue of the role of executive director of the ASA. And this is because of one of our former executive directors that was a very close friend with Sir John Templeton. And so for the last 4 years, I've been going to the Templeton Foundation meetings and cultivating those relationships. And as I've come to see, meeting after meeting, we've started having deeper conversations. And you know, one of the things that has come out of this is a proposal that we've just we submitted it this winter, but we were invited to submit it, which is kind of crossing the first hurdle. And we've gotten a lot of good feedback from the reviewers on that proposal. So we're very excited about the future with that. And another thing that as I've been building the relationships within the Templeton community, I've been talking to some of the officers and principals about actually coming to the ASA meetings. And we've already got a few people that come. Kevin Arnold, I don't want to embarrass you in the back, but he's been coming fairly regularly for the last few years. And I actually had the opportunity to invite some of the people that are in charge at the top leadership of the various foundations to come to our meeting next year. And that invitation has been received with a lot of interest. So we're excited about continuing to build those relationships. And just kind of by way of summary, I'd like to talk for a minute about organizational sustainability. And Vicki will talk more about the financial piece of that picture. But just from the standpoint of the growing attendance at the annual meetings over the last few years, the growing number of people that are engaged in local chapters and the growing number of local chapters themselves, we feel that we're gaining a more engaged membership, and we're really excited about that. We have about 2,000 members, regular members, in the organization. And then we have about another 3,000 people who are either friends, followers, or supporters, subscribers, etc. And so that really gives us an audience of about 5,000, which is something to get excited about. And we're really pleased with that, and certainly all of you in this room are potential spokespeople for the ASA, ambassadors for the ASA. And in the conversations that we have, we realize that over and over again, we hear these personal stories of word of mouth. You know, how did you, in fact, John just asked you to, you know, talk to somebody about how you got connected to the ASA and why you came to this meeting. And over again, we hear stories of personal connection, word of mouth connection. Somebody tells a friend about the ASA and someone says, you know what, I think so-and-so could actually benefit from this organization. And that's actually probably the best way to spread the word about the ASA and this fellowship of Christians in the sciences and people that are interested in the dialogue between science and faith. So we're really grateful for the things that we're seeing and the good things that are happening in this organization, and we would just encourage you to spread the good word about the ASA. So with that, I'll invite Vicki up to talk about the financial overview.
I'm not sure what John was talking about when he referred to this meeting as a trip to the dentist. He certainly wasn't talking about the financial piece, right, John? Well, We'll try not to make this piece like a trip to the dentist. I'm looking out in the audience, and I'm happy to see many of my fellow softball players here. We had a good time playing, earlier tonight. Well, I'd like to walk you through the financial picture of the ASA for the last year. Our fiscal year ended at the end of March, so this will be a fiscal 19 summary. And so first, looking at our income, this is a accrual basis accounting, and we have a financial review done every year. So these are the numbers from our auditor. Although the numbers that you'll see in front of you are unaudited because we didn't have the results of the audit prior to the printing of the impact report. So the numbers have changed slightly in the full audit, but this is a good close picture of it. So you'll see the various categories of income, contributions and grants, program revenue, dues and subscriptions, investment income from our endowment, and then other income. So we have about $500,000 in income. And essentially, our business model is threefold. It's dues and subscriptions, membership dues that you all pay, and library subscriptions. Program revenue relates to any of the revenue from the annual meeting. And then thirdly, contributions and grants is the third piece. So that's the source of all of our revenue. So again, about $500,000 in revenue. And then looking at the expense side of it, how are our funds allocated? And essentially, it's in three broad categories. The first one is program service expenses, and those are expenses related to running the annual meeting, putting out the journal, anything related to God and nature, including the salaries of four of us that are on the payroll, Leslie and I and Lynn and Chelsea, as well as any contractors that we paid. A number of our subcontractors, as we call them, or consultants, are people like Jim Peterson and others that we pay to run the different aspects of our program. And then the general and administrative expenses at $62,000 are any expenses related to the office, occupancy expenses, those kind of expenses. And then the third piece of it is broken down as fundraising expenses. And essentially, that's a portion of my time that is spent in fundraising efforts. So that's how our funds are allocated. If we look, and essentially we've run a balanced budget this past year. You may recall me talking about last year that John also talked about a three-year transition plan. So 3 years ago when we shifted to a two-person leadership model, we had received a $66,000 restricted gift for the sole purpose of the transition. And so that was over a two-year period, and so we're really delighted that in 2 years we've managed to balance a budget with a two-person leadership model. So we're excited about that. We have an endowment fund, and you'll see here the results of the endowment fund over the last 4 years. So in the last 4 years, the endowment growth has been about 18%. This past year, we were fortunate to have received three different endowment gifts to the tune of about $48,000. And part of our strategy in terms of development is to develop a planned giving program. We've never had a planned giving program in the ASA, and so the development committee is in process with formulating a plan, eventually launching what we'll call a legacy campaign in an effort to build the planned giving program and grow our endowment. So you'll hear about that in the coming months. But essentially, this is the growth of the endowment fund over the last 4 years. Last year, we received almost 212,000 in charitable gifts, which is really the highest amount of charitable gifts we've received since I've been on board with the ASA. So we've steadily seen an increase in our annual fund giving over the last 5 years, which again has been really encouraging. The breakdown of that, you'll see here, 476 donors gave that 212,000, and we've broken it down by constituency, and you'll see that the employees and the executive council at 100%, which I think really speaks volumes to their commitment to the organization. And then you'll see the various other percentages in the other categories. What we would love to see is those percentages obviously to increase and more participation in the area of fellows, members, and friends. But again, we're really grateful. Many of you contribute to the annual fund. You've contributed to the capital campaign, and we are really grateful for your contributions because we couldn't do it without you. And then the breakdown by dollars, again, about $150,000 for the annual fund, student scholarship fund, $5,000, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. Our capital fund, our capital campaign, as you know, has been retired. That was retired last year, $150,000 to fund the purchase of our office condos. But we kept our capital fund open because there's been some other capital needs. In fact, while we're gone, we've had the carpets replaced at our office in Topsfield. So these funds go for those kind of capital needs. We took in $1,400 in a memorial fund for Dick Bube. We did the same when Walt Hearn died. And here's that $48,000 that I mentioned earlier for the endowment fund. And again, we're really grateful for this and for others that have expressed interest in making planned gifts to the organization. And then CSCA is another part of the gifts that we've received as well. So again, there's the $212,000 in total gifts. And Leslie talked about putting the ASA in a strong organizational footing. We're also looking to put the organization on a strong financial footing. And again, I think we're poised and positioned and we're making progress in that area. I mentioned the office condos. We completed that capital campaign, which was really a huge success for the organization over a four-year time frame. I mentioned the balanced budget. Fiscal 20, we are planning for a balanced budget as well. Again, the legacy campaign that we're hoping to launch in the next year, I think, again, will put the organization on a strong financial footing for the future. And then again, we've talked about, and Leslie's talked about our strategy for expanding our reach, because as we expand our reach, gain new members, the trickle-down effect is going to be a stronger financial footing because people will then also be contributing to our annual fund and the capital campaign, or the capital fund and the endowment fund as well. So it's a trickle-down effect in terms of again, positioning us well, and really an effort to become a sustainable donor-driven ministry. And we are really encouraged about the efforts that are being made, and really, again, the contributions that you have all made in terms of your time, talent, and treasure to the organization. So thank you. Before I introduce our student testimonial, I just want to say a word about our student scholarship fund. You heard me mention it. We've said several times that we have 46 students here at the conference, and we're really delighted that we've had a large number of students attending the last several years, and the students are the next generation of ASA members, and we've really made a concerted effort, and part of our strategy has been to offer scholarships to the students to enable them to come. And this year we offered 20 scholarships, and they're basically in two different categories. We were able to offer some travel scholarships, so 13 students received travel funding to be able to be here. And then we also offer meals and lodging scholarships. So students that are presenting at the conference receive a 75% meals and lodging scholarship, and those that aren't receive 50%. And as you all know, student registration to the meeting is complimentary as well. So this year we gave out about 7,000 in student scholarships, and we will at the end of this meeting take a collection for student scholarships, because we fund those scholarships through, again, the generous giving of all of you. We have asked the student scholars to come tonight, and I believe I see several of them in the audience. And so we're going to take the opportunity now to ask those that are here to stand. Somebody came up to me last night and they said it would be really great to meet the students that are here. So there they all are. For being here. And now I'm going to ask Matt Solt to come forward. Matt has been an active student member for several years now. He is a graduate student in experimental particle physics at Stanford University, and he's one of the leaders of our Silicon Valley chapter and one of the recipients of a student scholarship this year. And so we're delighted to have you, Matt, come and say a few words.
All right, thanks, Vicki. Yep. All right, hi, my name is Matt Soltz. I'm a PhD student at Stanford University in the physics department. My research lies at the intersection of particle physics and astrophysics, where I'm attempting to understand the fundamental nature of dark matter. However, despite my current research interests, I also grew up in a stereotypical Christian community that, though positive, charitable, and well-intentioned, ultimately struggled to effectively communicate science and how it related to my faith. Being fed incorrect information from my church community and even sometimes my own family caused a significant amount of confusion in my spiritual journey. I was steadily losing interest in my faith, and the peak of my disinterest came during my senior year of undergrad at the infamous Ken Ham versus Bill Nye the Science Guy debate. Two of ASA's favorites, as you can tell. Perhaps future plenary speakers. anyway... it wasn't until the beginning of grad school when a pastor at my new church challenged me by asking what other Christians and sciences thought about the issues of science and faith. As I thought about it, I realized I didn't actually know. I sort of just assumed they're all creationists. And as I began searching in more detail, I was led to Francis Collins' book, The Language of God, and that's where I first heard of the ASA in one of his footnotes there. And after exploring ASA's resources, I was impressed with the academic rigor of their journals and articles that addressed many of my personal theological concerns, and I immediately became a student member. However, after some time, I realized an academic approach to the Christian faith is not sufficient, and being simultaneously a Christian in fundamental physics and a science student in the church, I found it difficult for the people around me to understand both my questions and experiences on the issues of science and faith. So I took a leap of faith and attended ASA's annual meeting in Golden, Colorado a few years ago, despite knowing absolutely no one. I was enabled by a student scholarship that covered most of my room and board, thanks to many generous donors, and some stored up sky miles, thanks to Delta Airlines. At the annual meeting, I felt an immediate connection with nearly everyone I interacted with. Certainly, the scientific and theological discussions were interesting, but what I found, I also found what I most wanted, a community of people who had wrestled with issues of science and faith in their scientific work, church communities, and personal lives in a similar way I had. One of the best aspects of the ASA is that there's virtually no barrier between the quote-unquote bigwigs and other members, especially students. At my first annual meeting, I immediately became friends with many of those in charge of the ASA, famous authors, and plenary speakers, And even at the ASA meeting in Boston, I was able to meet Francis Collins and thanked him for referencing the ASA in his book. I have been able to contribute to the ASA in two ways. The first is a talk I gave last year in Boston on my area of research called Dark Sectors, which is a collection of hypothetical exotic particles such as dark matter and dark forces. And to my surprise, people actually showed up. Even better, many people seem to enjoy it. My second contribution is helping start a local chapter with the support of Leslie and Vicky and the commitment of Bay Area ASA members, many of whom are here. We launched the Silicon Valley chapter with myself as a co-chair and Faith Stoltz as the chair. So overall, the ASA, both at the national and local levels, has enabled me to address my personal theological concerns. It has helped me establish a much-needed community and empowered me to address science and faith issues directly with people around me. The student scholarship especially has enabled me to attend multiple meetings, so I encourage those who are able to donate to do so. I also encourage students to inform their friends about the scholarships, but if you use the scholarship a few times, you should be warned that you may end up here in future meetings. And of course, next meeting, the goal for me is to be ineligible. So. Thank you for your attention.
Thanks, Matt. That was awesome.
All right, so can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, so we come to one of my favorite parts of the State of the ASA meeting, and that's the announcement of brand new fellows. So I'm hoping that at least some of these people are present, but it's fun to go through the list in any case. So when I call your name, if you would come forward, we have a certificate for you. So Warren Brown, is Warren here? Okay, set that one aside. I know that Jim Buchholz from Cal Baptist has designated Dr. Gain Aniker to receive his. So let's clap for Jim in absentia. The next one is David Buller, and I believe I saw him earlier today. So, the next one is April Cordero. I believe she had to leave already. The next one is Alan Dickin. And the next one, I was not able to attend this year, Keith Furman. You guys are a generous audience. Love it. The next is Mark Parker. The next is Barry Poynton. The next is Jitsi Vandermeer. He's not here either. You guys can clap. And finally, Derek Sherman. The next order of business is recognizing the 50-year members. So if you could come down here to receive a certificate when I call your name, that would be great. This microphone does not like my hair. Okay. First is Jack Balswick. Stanley Burden, Richard Carlson, Charles Chaffee. I'm looking at Lynn, she's shaking her head. She knows who's here and who's not. Stanley Chamberlain, John Kramer, Edward Crowell Jr., Edwin Carlo, Dwight Clausen, we have a winner. The next is David Leap. Lynn, you're not paying attention. David Leap, no, okay. Daniel Norman. Perry Phillips. David Saunders. Yay, David. I don't know if you heard his comment, but he said, you get one of these when you join as a graduate student. So the next part of our program involves remembrances of members who have passed away over the past year. So what we have the tradition of doing is for each of these members who have passed, taking a couple of moments for anyone who knew them to say a few words of some of the things that they remembered about them. So the first is Robert Carlstrom. Does anyone have any words to say about Robert? I'm looking at some of the longer term members. Okay. Well, I'm just gonna say a few words just from what we have here about him. He passed away in January of this year. He lived in Huntington Station, New York. He joined the ASA in 1959. He was active in his church and he worked for Sperry and Grumman. The next is Judson McClure. Did anyone know Judson? Okay, so Judson passed away in September of last year. He lived in Peekskill, New York. He had a PhD in chemistry. He taught and chaired at Mercy College. He worshiped at Community Bible Church. He joined the ASA in 2006 after his good friend Randy Isaac became director. Randy's waving in the back. Do you have anything you'd like to say?
Really enjoyed the journal afterwards. He would always often call me or get together and chat about some of the articles. He was a chemistry professor and he passed away in August. So.
Thank you. The next is Scott Northrup. Does anybody know Scott? So Scott passed away in January, was it this year or last year? I don't know if this is a time. typo? Okay, not a typo then. He lived in Silver Point, Tennessee. He was a chemistry department chair at Tennessee Tech. He continued to serve as Tech Bass Fishing Team faculty advisor after his retirement. That sounds like a pretty good gig. He worshipped at Trinity Allgood, and he was an ASA member for 40 years. Next is T. Gordon Scott. Did anyone know him? Okay. He passed away last August, lived in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. He was a professor of chemistry for 45 years at multiple institutions. Determined the now internationally accepted constant in biochemistry of the lifetime of the fluorescent excited state of coenzyme NADH under a half a billionth of a second. And he joined the ASA in 1967. Next, we have Robert van der Venen. Did anyone know Robert? Okay. He passed.
I spoke to Robert a few times. He was a very supportive member, you know, as he aged. He couldn't become very active, but I can say he was extremely supportive of the organization in a variety of ways.
Oh, thanks, Bob.
I'll just say something about Bob, too. I didn't really know Bob, but I know of him. I knew him by reputation, and in particular, his service as the, as you see there, as executive director of Global Scholars Program in Canada. It's an organization I came into later, so he served that organization. He was active number of places, and he had this reputational stuff that comes to us, and so these remembrances are really important. You know, we do things, and those echoes and those waves go on. Yeah. And God bless Robert.
Yeah, thank you. Robert. Yeah, Clarence, did you?
I knew Bob somewhat. He was an active member of the Toronto.
Institute for Christian Studies
in Toronto, and on one occasion his group sponsored a mini conference on science and Christian faith in Toronto, and I had the privilege of sleeping overnight in his condo.
Awesome.
I had a number of books on my bookshelf with his name in them.
Awesome.
I don't remember how I got them, but it was not directly from him, but it was passed on to someone else who then passed it on to me in my professional development and understanding of the philosophy that was espoused by the Institute for Christian Studies as well.
Fantastic.
So we left a great legacy.
That's fantastic. Yeah, he joined the ASA back in 1956, so another long-term member. Eldon Whipple Jr. Did anyone know Eldon? Wow, yeah. He's a member of the ASA for 40 years, PhD in physics. Palmer, Alaska was his home. Specialized in space physics, particularly in charged particle interactions in space.
Plus, what you should know, is NASA space.
Yeah, and I apologize that I don't recognize his name. Program specialist for NASA's Cluster 96 satellite launch on June 4th of 96. Did anyone have the occasion to meet Eldon? Okay, so before we move on to the next section, I would just like to say that, you know, I just think this remembrances is such a neat tradition. And, you know, just the idea that we're in an organization of people that are interested in the science and faith conversation, and that we can recognize when one of our members has passed is just a really neat tradition, I think. So, yeah, Randy.
Leslie, it's a good chance to
tell everyone, especially those that are newcomers, about the Members in Glory page on the website.
Yeah.
If you look at it, there are a lot of names on it. I can't even count it, but it's an incredible record of the number of people over the 77, 78 years who really contributed and been part of it.
Yeah.
The factory is, if you know of someone from ASA has passed away, part of our problem is getting the information. We often don't hear it, but they'll tell us until pretty far down below. So you can inform us if you know.
Yeah, thanks, Randy. And now Sharon would like to come up and give a prayer before our offering. So tangled up. There you go. Thanks.
Well, it's my privilege to lead us in prayer as we close out our time of remembrance. And after I finish, I'll start these baskets around, just pass them back and forth. We don't need ushers for this. And as the baskets go around, I think it would be nice if we were to sing together the doxology. So let's pray together. Lord, we're so grateful for the ASA, for each member throughout the years, for our founders, for all who have served on staff and on our executive council and in so many other ways. Lord, the work of your hand has been evident throughout the years. And the impact of each of these people that we remember this evening, as John said, is a ripple throughout not just the scientific community, but also throughout Christendom. And we're keenly aware of how important the work is that we do as we represent Jesus Christ, as scientists in our churches and as Christians in our workplaces. Lord, our desire is to honor you in all that we do, in our work, in our worship, in our relationships, in our influence. Lord, may you provide all that we need to do that. Sustain us when times are difficult or we face challenges that may seem insurmountable. Lord, we know that all things are possible through you, and we know that you give us all that we need. And it's evident in these lives that we celebrate and remember that the accomplishments did not come without toil and without challenge and without disappointment. And we know that they were all done in deep, deep faithfulness to you. We're grateful for the witness that goes before us, and may it inspire each of us to stand firm in our convictions, to work well in our research, in our studies, in our teaching, so that you will be honored and glorified throughout our communities, our country, and around the world. Lord, we love you. We're grateful for this organization and the many ways that it impacts each of us. May this be a time of blessing to you as we continue to meet and fellowship and learn together. In Jesus' name, amen. Someone with a better voice than me can start us off a cappella.
Praise God from whom all blessings flow.
Pleasure to give you some information about next year's program. Here's our program and local arrangements team. We've got two people from the Midwest and two people from the West Coast. So, I wonder where the meeting's going to be. Well, let's see. Well, it's going to be at Point Loma Nazarene University in San Diego. Yeah, looking forward to that. We had a great meeting there some years ago. I didn't happen to go to that one. I regret it, and I'll get my chance. So we're very grateful to the university for welcoming us already. And this is going to be an interesting meeting because it is going to be a partnership between the ASA, Trinity Evangelical Divinity School's Carl Henry Center, and the Creation Project, which many of you know about because they've been coming to our meeting for 3 or 4 years now with a little stand to let you know about their work. And then also the Virginia Mason Foundation, that's not right?
Charlotte Mason Foundation.
I'm very sorry, we made a huge mistake. I have no idea who Virginia Mason is, but Virginia's sister, Charlotte, has a foundation too. And so we're really excited that Charlotte will be there. All right, so I knew it was Mason, and I Googled it. And it came. That's the first one that came up that just seemed to have something that might fit in. But anyway, but what I understand is the Masons are going to. They're going to have their own meeting, and they will be coming to some of our plenary talks.
This is what happens when you leave the council.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, as I said, I'm so grateful. So they will be, they're an educational foundation,
yes.
Right? Yeah, which makes sense because these guys do medicine, so whatever. Now, the partnership with Trinity is really significant because the Henry Center has had this creation project for 3 years now. It's also Templeton funded, and they've been doing a deep dive into the doctrine of creation. And I have been privileged, by virtue of geography, because Trinity's not so far from here, to participate in many of their events related to the Creation Project. And I've always thought it would be wonderful if 300 scientists, STEM people, could be at some of the events that they have had. So let's look at what we have so far. We see this as an exploration of doctrine creation for us. It's an unusual opportunity for us to interact with theologians who are focused on areas of theology and biblical study directly bearing on the relationships between Christian faith, scientific discovery, and practice. And we hope it'll lay the foundations for the integration and provide case studies that indicate what's at stake and why the whole body of Christ must work together for the common good. Now, we're going to do something a little unique. We'll have plenary talks, and, you know, traditionally the plenary talks follow with parallel sessions. Well, one of the parallel sessions will be a follow-up topical workshop where the speaker will attend along with some invited respondents, and there'll be a dialogue, and it'll also be an opportunity for us to dialogue as well. But we will also have the traditional parallel sessions. Well, who do we have? To give us a historical overview of the doctrine of creation, we have Lydia Jaeger, who's from the Institut Biblique in France. And we have Jack Collins to talk about sort of the biblical studies aspect of the doctrine of creation. Jack Collins, many of you have read Jack Collins from Covenant Seminary in Missouri. We hope to have a speaker on the faith-science interface, you know, where science and theology converge. We actually are in discussion with Alistair McGrath, so we don't know if that'll happen or not. Then we're going to have case studies, historical case study, genes, Adam, and genetics, 19th century perspective from David Livingstone. He's been to ASA in the past. Just a wonderful, he's kind of a cultural historical geographer, and he's from Queen's University, Belfast, Northern Ireland. And then a present case study, Psychopharmacology, Original Sin, Mental Illness, from Hans Madume, who is a professor at Covenant College in Georgia. Hans has an MD and then followed that with a doctoral studies in theology at TEDS. And then we're looking for someone to get into sort of the future. How do we think about the doctrine of creation and future issues like AI, eschatology, transhumanism? And so either Ken Ham or Bill Nye will be one of those speakers. So we all know that it's a beautiful place. Looking forward to be there. These are some pictures of their science building, which looks spectacular. We know that it's right on the coast, already planning a wonderful geology field trip where we'll be in t-shirts, swimsuit, and flip-flops, because I don't think we're going to leave the beach for that one. And there's all kinds of nature there to enjoy. So I think we're going to have a great time next year, and I'll see you there.